understanding your unit economics, understanding the levers that go into the business to make it work is probably the most important shift in this last 12 months. Last year, people were greedy. And so I played very defensively, and that's, you know, being really light on with that spend, really being pulling back, making sure we're spending efficiently.
Today, we have a very familiar face. He's responsible for about $15 million a year in ad spend across a few different businesses, which relates to a revenue of about $200 million a year.
The market in Google is a fixed amount. If there's 100 people searching for the thing that you sell, that is your fixed amount. You're not going to grow that market by just only bidding on or staying in Google. The only way you grow that market is by...
If you were to do that right now, how would you do that?
Better to bring the customer in at a higher acquisition cost sometimes, because they end up being...
But have you found that regardless of the size of the business, there's a certain daily budget per ad that works, or can you can just continue to scale it up?
Good. Yeah, so I...
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Unemployable Podcast. Today we have a very familiar face, Daniel Turner. He's been on our podcast before, and I call Dan the ads guy. He's much more than an ads guy. He's a personal friend, one of my best mates, and business partners in multiple businesses. And he was on the pod earlier this year and talking about everything about ads and in this digital marketing space. And there's been a lot that's changed since then. So we thought it was a good idea to bring him back on so we could get updated on what's going on this ever-changing landscape. Mark, thank you for coming.
Excited to be here for this one. Obviously, something that we're embarking on, the whole off Amazon, Meta ads, Google ads space. So yeah, I've had a few chats with Dan recently, and he's been like really, really instrumental in not just giving me advice on ads, but kind of how to see the world within my business or with relation to my business. So wealth of knowledge, can't wait to get into it.
For those of you guys that don't know, Dan, Mark, and I caught up about 3 weeks ago. And I guess Mark was in a bit of a pickle really with his business and where he was at with growing it. He was at crossroads, thinking he needed to do a lot of different things when it came to ads. And Dan just gave him some real raw advice. And he took that and now is really using those strategies on growing his online business off of Amazon, on Shopify, in real time, which is what Mark was just talking about. We mentioned on one of the Friday pods, but if you haven't watched that, that's what that is. And James, I know you're always loving to chat about ads.
Yeah, I mean, not to try and pump this pod anymore, it needs to be, but if anyone's running ads at all in any capacity, agency or not, listen up. This is be a masterclass. So, when Dan talks, yeah, you listen.
These are one of those podcasts where you watch it 5, 6, 7 times. I've had people message me talking about how many times they've watched the original podcast. And the thing is with Dan, right? He's such a humble guy for the amount of success that he has had in his life. Not only is he an ads guy, right, with what I call him, but he's a very, very successful entrepreneur in his own right in a lot of different industries and categories. So is Mark, very successful investor, property investor, was in real estate, sold over 3,000 blocks of land in the past. Now he's got a very successful online business that he's got on Amazon, and he's taking on Shopify as well overseas in the U.S., and he's actually learning and becoming a very, very good trader, trading stocks and Bitcoin and these types of things online. And for those of you guys that don't know who James is a successful business operator himself. He's been an entrepreneur for many, many years and also a real estate developer. He's bought many businesses and sold businesses over time, and he's got a couple startups at the moment as well that he has. So I'm going to frame you a little bit, Dan, so people can, you know, perk up their ears and start listening, because it's always good to do that. And this is the reason why you guys are going to want to be listening to this guy today. So he's responsible for about $15 million a year in ad spend across a few different businesses, which relates to a revenue of about $200 million a year. He's been in this space for about 20 years. He's talked on some massive stages. He hasn't done that for quite some time because literally he's been in the trenches growing businesses that I'm involved in with him and our business partners. Some of you guys might know them, some of you might not, but we've got MX Store and Fight HQ, ATV Store, Moto Outlet, and we've got some on the back burner at the moment that are going to be coming out as well. And some of these businesses are 9-figure businesses. So this is why you guys got to listen to him, right? But not only that, he helps people, right, with small businesses at the same time. So he doesn't run their ads, but for us, you know, like sitting down with Mark as an example, taking some time out of his very busy schedule to sit down with people is a very big passion of what Dan does. And he's all about giving, to society, to help others, because we're all in the same situation here. This whole digital marketing landscape, right, is very, very confusing, right? We're getting bombarded with people that want to be running our ads. There's on every street corner, there's a digital marketer saying that they can provide you with the best ROI on your ad spend, that are going to promise to double, triple, quadruple your sales. It's a highly unregulated industry, which makes it very, very difficult on what decisions to make. Who do you hire? Do you actually need to go and hire an external digital marketing company? Or can you learn some of this in-house yourself? And that's some of the discussions that we were talking about with Mark. And Mark was mentioning some things in regards to, optimization. And I got to take this guy. And Dan, it was just so funny because Dan's just like, stop. You're confusing yourself. You don't have to mention that until you're doing $5 million a year and all these types of things, which is pretty cool. So we're going to cover some topics, you know, how the game's changed in Australia over the last couple of years, the current winners and losers really in the digital marketing space, omni-channel versus platform specific, what are the benefits, what are the pros and the cons, and also which platforms are actually performing, because there's lots of noise out there. We've got TikTok and TikTok Shop, and obviously Instagram, we've got Facebook, we've got LinkedIn. There's all these different types of platforms that we're all trying to capture people's attention. So Dan, what has been happening over the last little while since you've been on, I guess, in this landscape?
I think probably the biggest thing in this last sort of 12 months is in Australia, you've had quite a significant economic shift, which has led to differences in people's buying patterns, probably the main thing. So, and I'm going a little bit macro here, but when you have discretionary incomes decreasing, right, it leads to different purchasing decisions. You know, someone who, you know, they may have had a surplus of $1,000 a week or a month, you know, 12 months ago, 2 years ago, post-COVID. Now that $1,000, $2,000 isn't there. It might be $200 a month, you know, instead, or nothing. And so I think the biggest thing that's changed is it's a much tougher retail environment is probably the thing I would say. And understanding your unit economics, understanding the levers that go into the business to make it work is probably the most important shift in this last 12 months. Making sure that you're spending money in the right areas is more important now than ever. And it's been a really interesting change where end of last year, you saw everybody was on sale, retails were on sale every 2 weeks. Right, you could always grab a bargain. As a consumer, it was great. You could always grab a bargain because people are just always on sale. I think that was a byproduct of, you know, over inventorying, you know, having too much stock, having to get sales because sales were declining. And now you're in a situation where business is starting to go under, which is going to create, it's both very unfortunate and sad, but also there's a huge opportunity for real, I guess, savvy retailers and business operators over this next 12 months, take advantage of their market where their competitors are starting to pull back on ad spend. Their competitors are maybe going under, they're closing stores, they're shutting down their online. And that just creates space for the really savvy operators to push harder. So I think we've seen an increase in ad spend, an increase in ad cost. So audiences have cost more over this last 12 months. I'm starting to see those retract a little bit now as businesses are going, hang on a sec, we can't spend $10,000 a month anymore. We're losing money. We need to drop that to $5,000. Then we need to drop it to $0. That's probably the biggest shift in this last 12 months that I've seen.
Yeah, it's so interesting because that's what a lot of people don't realize, right? There's a big level of macroeconomics, right, when it comes to business. Sometimes we're like a horse with blinders, right, in our business, and we don't seem to see outside of that, right? And I know that when we've had our strategy meetings, you've been big on that, right? Like obviously one of our business partners is very bullish when it comes to growth. Yeah. And there's a reason why at times we call Dan tinfoil hat Dan, right? Because he looks at these things, yeah, right? And goes, guys, I don't think we're going to grow as fast as what you think because interest rates have increased. The COVID spending, the COVID giveaway is gone now. And people are tightening up their belts and retail spend is down, right? So just because we've been compounding growth at this rate, at this level, doesn't mean it's going to happen again year after year after year.
One way to look at macro within the business world is macro is the weather. It is the weather conditions that you are facing. Are you heading into winter? Are you heading into summer? Are you heading into spring?
Dan, are there like three major levers? I mean, you're pulling pulling the trigger on $15 million yep, across a multitude of different businesses, yep, discretionary spending sort of businesses. MX Store, yep, is certainly a more a wants versus a needs sort of business. What are three levers you're doing specifically to try and stem that or maintain at least the nose of the plane up, yep, versus a dip?
So I think the thing I would say to this and like a bit of an internal joke where Eric and the boys will call me Tinfoil Hat Dan, but last year I was very defensive. Like, so when Warren Buffett's be greedy when people are fearful when people are greedy. Last year people were greedy. Mm-hmm. And so I played very defensively, and that's, being really light on with ad spend, really being pulling back, making sure we're spending efficiently, really dialing the numbers. This year for me is the opposite. I'm now going hyper aggressive, hyper offensive. You're walking onto the field ready for the battle and you're going to win. So that's my mentality change. As far as the things that I'm dialing, number one, I'm ensuring that the net is cast as far and as wide as possible. And so if we have a product available for sale, it is in as many places we can get it to. It's in Google Shopping, it's on Meta, it's on Insta, it's in YouTube. If you're looking for anywhere, you're finding us. So make sure that your products, I'm making sure that my products and our categories and our brands are everywhere. That's number one. Number two, as far as like a lever, is ad spend. Don't overcommit, right? When you go offensive, you can forget about the defense. You still got to play defense a little bit. So I'm pushing as aggressively as I can within the markets we're in on spending as much as we possibly can. So year on year, our numbers, we might be spending more, but so long as our growth is outpacing that spend, I'm happy.
Do you have a specific metric when it comes to spend that it's like keep spending up until a certain ROAS, or it's just like a monthly ad, it's a monthly number based on P&L?
There's a hierarchy of numbers, and that depends whether it's a financial metric, whether it's a site metric, or whether it's an ad metric. And so from a financial perspective, my very first number is the percentage of ad spend against the sales, right, in the P&L. So percentage against, what are you spending as a percentage, right, against, and that's not just percentage of revenue, you also should be looking at as GP,
right?
Because, a business that's got a 50% GP is very different to a business that's got 30% GP. You can't spend as much as a percentage. So that's number one. Second thing is my LTV. So am I ensuring that I'm growing my customer base and that my customer base is repeat purchasing over time?
Yep.
If that's static or declining, then you have a fundamental problem. Mm-hmm. Right, because you're every time you acquire a customer, they're leaking out the back. Then it's ROAS, yep, right? So percentage is always first for me. Then it's ROAS or your CPA or CAC. So what is it costing you to acquire a customer, mm-hmm, and what is the return? So when you spend a dollar, right, and this is what ROAS is, but when you spend a dollar, you're making $5, $10, mm-hmm, $20. Like with MX, I think our current meta numbers are like 161:1. That's our ROAS, which is, get into attribution at some stage, but that's a number. You would spend all day there, right? But ROAS is a number. And then the last one is actually a CPC. So it's a financial metric because it's what you're paying per click, and you're pairing that. So your cost per click is your CPC, and you're pairing that with your RPC, which is your revenue per click. So what am I making for every session or every piece of traffic or every time someone clicks an ad? How much am I making with that click?
Mm. All right. I want to pull back a little bit there, and we've been using a lot of acronyms.
Can I just say something? As someone who doesn't understand what all of those acronyms are, like for anyone watching this, and this is what I'm going to do when I get home. I'm going to put all this into ChatGPT. I'm going to get it to explain each and every one of these, and then I'm going to apply it to my business.
Yep.
So, but okay, so I'm going to come back to that in a sec. So LTV, what is LTV for the people that don't know?
So LTV is your lifetime value. So for every customer that you bring in, yeah, what are they worth to you over the lifetime of that customer? And you can't, you don't look at it as a, you know, I have acquired this customer, they purchased once, and, you know, they bought $100 worth of stuff. What matters is that over the next 3 years, they're going to come back and purchase five times, right? And they're going to be worth $500 to me over the next 3 years.
How do you find that out if you're a new business? Like, how do you, is it just lick the finger, put it in the wind and see what happens? Or is it a guesstimate? Is there an actual calculation that you can use?
Yeah, so the easiest calculation is total revenue divided by total unique customers, right? But you can only get those numbers once you have history.
All right, so to get your lifetime value of a customer, you take your total revenue,
yep,
divided by your total unique customers. Yep. What is a total unique customer?
So if you have sold to, say, 100,000 people,
yep,
right, but you have 500,000 orders,
yeah,
the value you're looking for is the 100,000.
Not the 500,000 orders, yeah, yep. Because one customer can order 10 as an example, right, but they're still the same.
There's nuances to the metric, but that's the simplest way as a business owner, if you just, yep, want to think about it. Like, there's like equations that you can go into, but, yep, like, that's the simplest way to think,
all right,
about
it. And then you got ROAS, yep, which is return on ad spend. So explain that.
That simply means that for every dollar I spend,
yeah,
how much do I make? And the important piece there, it's not really something that is often talked about. It's not necessarily return on ad spend as a revenue metric. It should be return on ad spend as a margin metric. I want both.
Okay, so for instance, if I have a business and I have 50% GP,
yep,
right, what would that, what's a good ROAS for a 50% GP? Or do you want to know how much that product is before you answer that?
Well,
does it matter?
It doesn't necessarily matter, in the sense that if you spend a dollar and you make two,
yep,
right, if you've got a 50% GP,
yep,
then you're breaking even,
yep,
on the sale of the product, not on the operational cost of the business,
yep,
right, which is why the GP matters.
Yep.
But I roughly in my head, I will work on somewhere between a quarter and a third of my GP as my ROAS number that I want to look for. Yep. So if I'm making, if my GP is 50%,
yep,
and I'm happy to spend 15%, 20% maybe,
yep,
and that'll give me a 5-to-1 ROAS, right? Yep. I'm at 20%. If I could do 5-to-1 ROAS on revenue,
yep,
and a 2.5-to-1-ish on GP.
Yeah, you mentioned before about attribution, and it's a pretty tricky topic, right? So let's say you had a customer comes in, they spend $100, they then buy something again in 18 months' time. They're on your database, they see an email, but then they come back in through another click. How do you attribute that LTV,
yep,
accurately? Because I know there's software out there like your Hirosas and whatnot, and, yep, they all claim to do all this wonderful stuff, and,
yep,
half of them are usually pretty fucking useless. So, yep, that's why I wonder, you know, so when you go revenue per click, or it's like, okay, cool, if I sold two products but it took two clicks for the first purchase and three clicks for the second,
yes,
like top of funnel, middle of funnel, bottom of funnel, plus they threw an email. I mean, how do you work that math out? Because especially when you're dealing with the database your size, which is massive.
Yep. So if revenue per click, all you're doing is you're taking your total traffic divided by your revenue. Or sorry, your revenue divided by your total traffic. For a time period.
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
Attribution is I'm less concerned with attribution these days.
Right.
This is why it's a hierarchy of metrics and a hierarchy of numbers that I look at. It's why percentage is most important to me, because so long as I'm spending at a percentage and I'm growing, right, my business is healthy. Mm-hmm. If I, you know, worry that, oh, my Facebook ROAS or my Instagram ROAS is 4-to-1 or my Meta ROAS is 4-to-1, you know, my TikTok is 8-to-1 and my Google's 3-to-1, and I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to cut all Google spend because it's only a 3-to-1, or I've got to make my Google spend match my TikTok ROAS or my Meta ROAS. You kill your business, right? Each platform has its own value and it works differently,
mm-hmm,
right? So the only true way, right, to measure your attribution or what a marketing activity is doing is to turn the thing off. So anyway, you'll still have a halo effect. Like, you turn off your Meta ads, right? There'll be a period of time where you'll still get return and sales and stuff from the work you've done previously. But you'll see that it's not 162-to-1 or whatever it is at the moment for us, right? It might be 7% of revenue, which ends up being, well, it's a 10-to-1, right? So I don't believe any attribution on any platform is accurate. I have not seen one that is.
It's how does the, all those ingredients come together?
Bingo, right? And so this is where the mentality is when I say cast the net. First thing is have every product or every brand or every category, everything that you're offering, a service, whatever it is, in as many places or every place possible that your customer is. So if it's Google, someone searches in Google and I'm selling this hat, right? They're searching for that hat. I'm owning shopping. I'm the paid ad. I'm organic. I'm Google My Business, right? I also, if they go to Facebook, when they look, they've come to my site, they go to Facebook or they go to Instagram, they see me. They go to YouTube, they see an ad, right? So where, you want to be everywhere.
Mm. When it comes to, and Eric coined the ad guy, but I know there's a lot more to it than that from a, like an email marketing perspective as well. Do you throughout the year strategically look at your inventory and go, right, we're going to discount this stock heavily to break even, to get the, to pay for the click, to build the database, to then be able to run EDMs to them and all that sort of stuff as well? Or are you just always purchase first at?
Yeah, I guess it comes back to the strategy of the business, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to be a discount, if you want to be, and we've just spoke about this before, but if you want to be having to rely upon that injection of discounted sales, and that's your model, then that's fine.
Yep.
I like, for me personally, I don't want to play that game,
mm-hmm.
right? You want to offer so much value as a business, or offer so much value from a service perspective, that people come to you because they know you're trustworthy, that you're reliable, that they're going to get what they're going to get. Like the number one thing with people, at least in Australia, like am I going to get my thing? Is it going to arrive to me? And is a carrier going to throw my parcel over the fence and break it? Like, am I actually going to get the thing delivered? Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Probably have to cut that out. Anyway, so people want to know that they're going to, one, you have the thing in stock. Two, it's going to get to them. Three, it's at a good value price, right? And that you're good people to deal with. So I stay away from the discounting place, unless it's your strategy.
Yeah. Well, you said earlier, if back off the back of COVID, that over inventoried, then
different story.
Yeah.
Right? So, like we have there's certain lines. Like, you just make a mistake, you buy 1,000 of those things, and those 1,000 things don't sell. There's a price point at which they will sell.
Mm.
So, you know, we run 2 events a year, and that's how we will usually get rid of stock that is sat there for a period of time. Or you'd go, you know what, that's dead stock. I'm not going to be able to sell it. So give it to your customers,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not like, don't discount the value of the product, yeah. make it a value add, yeah. in yeah. which case you're going, hey, it's still a $20 hat, right? I can't sell the damn thing for $3,
yeah.
right? So I'm not going to make money on it. That $20 hat is then valuable to the customer, or that to your existing customer base, and they'll value more.
Goodwill.
Goodwill, exactly.
And that has to do with the branding of the business, right?
Yes.
And like, you look at Amex, it's not about price. It's not about discounting. It's about service and range. And that's what we're about, right? And those are the boundaries. Those are the guidelines. You look at gym wear as an example, right? I never buy gym wear at regular price.
No.
Because I know every 3 months in condition that there's a up to 80% off sale, and I'm buying shorts for $20 and I'm buying tees for $10 and socks for, $5 and these types of sales. Like,
it's super predictable.
It's so predictable, right?
You train your customers.
But what happens is that whole industry, it's been trained that way,
yep.
right? I know people, I have other friends that do the exact same thing. Like, you go to Lululemon though, mm-hmm. You're paying full pop every time, yep. for Lululemon. You ain't coming out, 70 or 80%, and you're gonna be paying top dollar for it, right? But you're gonna get high quality, you're gonna have it in stock, you're gonna have a good experience. I wanna come back to you, Mark, on what you said.
Can I just add one thing? So James, on that too, if you do a campaign where you're discounting your product, right, and you bring in a bunch of customers, and for the sole purpose to then go back to them, the problem is that you've already preconditioned that database to buy at a discount.
Mm.
And so when you start, the only time they'll buy is every 3 months when Eric over here goes, I know you're going to go on sale. Mm. That's when you make your sales. Mm-hmm. And so better to bring the customer in at a higher acquisition cost sometimes, because they end up being more valuable over time.
Mm.
I want to come back to Mark, and you said something. You're like, I'm going to take all this information and I'm going to put it into ChatGPT. And I've been doing that lately as well. But if you were to do that right now, how would you do that? So if someone's listening right now and they got all this information, are you just putting in, what does LTV mean? What does this mean? How does this, like, how would you actually input that into ChatGPT?
No, I mean, I've found that the best way, and I do this a lot with macro podcasts and financial podcasts, but I've found that the best way to put it in is to give ChatGPT context. So I've got like a folder that ChatGPT, we only speak about my business, my e-commerce business. So it's being conditioned to learn all the things that I'm telling it. And ChatGPT is great because it has history and context, right? Whereas Grok doesn't have that yet. And that's, I think, one of the most powerful things for it.
All right. So I want to stop you there for a sec, because a lot of people are using ChatGPT. They open it up, right? New page, ask questions. Next thing you know, they're asking questions about business. Then all of a sudden, their missus says, oh, we should book a trip. And they have that same page open. And then they go, all right, where should I go in Japan? And so they're feeding this all this information, and then they close it down. And then the next day they come. Because I think this is very on topic right now, because everyone's ChatGPT. You're saying, I create a folder. So when you click on that type right-hand thing, right, and a new page comes up, is that a folder?
Yeah, so I've got subfolders for all my conversational topics with ChatGPT. So I've got my e-commerce brand, I've got deep thoughts, got macro, deep macro, I've got trading.
Yeah, this is very important, guys. So these are my
core topics. Yeah. So ChatGPT knows what my core topics
are. Yeah. Overall, memory inside ChatGPT remembers the whole lot, right? It doesn't delineate between this folder and that folder. It's now got...
It may or it may not, but the reality is that you're putting those threads in a single place so you can call upon those threads rather than just being
everywhere. So do you recommend doing it? Because I know you're a big do the same thing.
Absolutely.
Your folders are like...
For sure. But it's funny when you do just type something random in about a business question, it'll pop in and it'll pop in your business in there. It's like, hang on, I'm not asking about that business. Yeah. Leave that one out for a sec and just come back to a straight question, but it'll start driving past topics back into that thread.
So you would open up ChatGPT, you'd open up a new folder, which is just... top right hand, click new folder, and then you'd save that information. And then obviously when you say give it context, so are you saying, okay, I have a business, this is where it's at, this is what it's doing, I understand this, I don't understand that, but if I plug in this information, like when you're saying give it context, you're trying to basically brain dump as much information about your business into it, then you could actually start using some of these numbers?
Like ChatGPT knows a bunch of the marketing questions that I've been asking. It knows about the UGC campaign that I'm about to run. It has context behind all the things that I'm doing in my business because I'm running all those things through ChatGPT. So let's just use this example. I'll go in and I'll say, okay, ChatGPT, you know that I'm about to do a marketing campaign where we're going to capture a whole bunch of UGC content. My aim is to try and get to $100,000 in gross sales per month as quickly as possible. Here are some of the metrics that an expert in the space has told me, MX Store, and I'll even refer to MX Store. Here is an expert has told me that I need to be looking at and tracking my performance on. Step one, TARCO. Step two, CTV. Step three, ROAS. Step four, CPC. Can you give me some sort of model, formula, method, recipe, so that I can track these things more effectively, understand what they mean, and how much emphasis should I be placing on each one for the very first ads that I launch, so to speak?
Yeah. See,
how do you use it, Dad? By the way, you are ChatGPT. I'm just saying,
it's very, very important question. I hope that Dan is using it a different way. I know nothing about ads, right? I know when I'm listening to a macro podcast and they're mentioning a concept that I know, like options trading or SKU volatility, I'm like, I've never done that before. Mm. So I need to know what is the approach that people are using to deal with this kind of stuff. But you would be different, I'm assuming.
Yeah. So I use it as an aid, not a crutch.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is like you don't use it to you're not gonna develop deep knowledge or deep understanding by utilizing ChatGPT in place of experience or in place of like heavy reading or whatever else, right? So I use it as an aid, not a crutch. It's good that you're putting it in to go, hey, what does this mean? Or give me context around my business. It gives you like surface level understanding.
You're not chasing it for actual answers that you're then going and making those exact decisions on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's where you see, and I've had these discussions with you before and going, and Jake and the gang going, as good as it is, it could be very dangerous.
Yeah, like if you use it too much, like it's replacing your brain, right? So don't lose the ability to think.
And it makes mistakes regularly.
100%.
That's not even relevant. I see. And then you go and slash the whole thing and start again.
There's a couple of issues with it as well, right? Like if everyone in your business niche is using ChatGPT to go in and say, you know, write me my scripts or write me, then ChatGPT is probably going to be giving a lot of people the same information, and then you're going to start to see the same taglines and marketing things pop up over and over again. I think a better way to use ChatGPT is to try and minimize the time spent for you to get to a certain place. So I looked up 6 brands that are really good at direct response. So like Cetera, a bunch of brands that have ads that are doing over 4 million views. And I took all the transcripts of those ads. So I had 21 transcripts of 6 different companies' ads. I put it into ChatGPT. I said, analyze all these successful ads and give me the foundational principles on what I need to be looking at when creating my scripts.
Hmm.
And so it kind of, rather than, like it kind of shortcuts the time, but you can't replace creativity. You have to still be doing the work.
Yeah, so the aid component there is like, throw them in, give me the transcripts, right? Or condense the information, summarize the information. But you should still go through those ads yourself, right? You still want to go through the transcripts. And the speeding up the process, like it's great for ideation, like creation of ideas, you know, expanding thoughts, because it gives you something you may not have thought of, right? Which then takes you down a path which ends up being profitable, right? But you give it a 500 page PDF and say, hey, give me a 1-page summary of what this means. Great.
Mm. Well, have you toyed much with the deep search function? No. Yeah, that spits out some pretty crazy stuff.
It's pretty fucking good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's for people without a brain like you and I, except for Dan.
I've asked it. So Dan's probably gonna be looking at me going, just do the work, mate. But I then asked Deep Search to come up with, you know, 5 or 10 different scripts, and it came up with these 2-minute scripts that were just like, now I need to go back and I need to go through the videos and take things out and change things and do, but the result was incredible.
Just on that, so we don't get stuck in a GPT rabbit hole for too long. Yeah. OpenAI has come out with now is academy.openai, and they've launched their own online learning platform in there. So it goes from they drop a video a week or whatever the cadence is. It's like, what is prompt engineering? Now they're up to advanced prompt engineering. So the stuff that you ask Mark, what do you put in there? Well, now you're getting the education from the people who designed the language model themselves. So if anyone wants to go and have a look at that, you could probably put on the screen what it is academy.openai, and you can go in there and learn how to become a prompt guru.
I think, and it's important, you know, just to close on this point, it doesn't replace your brain. It can only enhance you. Yeah,
it's an add to,
right?
Not a replacement.
I think this, put it in the comments, guys, if you guys, I think this could be a whole podcast, live podcast on how you guys use ChatGPT. Right, in business and in your life, because a lot of people are using it at a very, very surface level. You guys are obviously using it at a deeper level, and then there's people using it on another, you know, on another planet. But I think it'll be very interesting to see. And if you guys are interested in that, put it in the comments. I want to chat a little bit about like the rise of TikTok Shop and Instagram Reels and AI tools for content. Should people be looking at this with intent? Or is this a distraction?
Look, I'll go TikTok or making a decision on a channel, because at the end of the day, whether it's TikTok with Shop as applied, Instagram or Meta, Instagram or Facebook or Google or YouTube or whatever else, at the end of the day, there's channels, right? And depending on your type of business, right, really is it that is what predicates what channel you should go into or invest in first. So, you know, if you're a plumber in like Narang, Gold Coast, your first port of call should be Google, where people are searching for, you know, fix my toilet in Narang, or plumber Narang. And whether there's, you know, whether TikTok Shop comes out or the next thing or the next thing, that is completely irrelevant. So long as people are searching in Google, that should always be the place you dominate first. So it's easy to get distracted in going into down rabbit holes, which you can do. It's easy to get distracted going into channels that you don't necessarily need. The thing that I would say, however, is that the market in Google is a fixed amount, right? If there's 100 people searching for the thing that you sell, that is your fixed amount. You're not going to grow that market, right, by just only bidding on or staying in Google. The only way you grow that market is by expanding out into the other areas, your Instas, your TikToks, your Facebooks, your YouTube, because that's how you build the market, the addressable market that you're looking in, to then have 150 people searching, or whether it's 100,000 to 150,000, doesn't matter the numbers. What matters is that your Google is the place you capture, and then these other places, the place you build.
I couldn't believe the stats, and I can't say them right now, but Raf pulled it up on one of the events, and Raf's an expert TikTok guy, which you know as well. The amount of people that are on Facebook that aren't on Instagram, the amount of people that are on TikTok that aren't on Instagram. Even in Unemployable, we sit here and we assume that everybody watches every podcast, right? And that's why we repeat ourselves at the beginning of every podcast, introducing ourselves and what we do and why you should listen to us and why we're relevant and, you know, to give us your attention. And it's the same thing with Facebook and Instagram. Like, just because we can't sit there and assume I'm on Instagram and Facebook, I don't need to do TikTok, right? Or I'm on TikTok, I don't need to do Facebook and Instagram, because there's so many people. And again, ChatGPT will probably give you some good stats around how many people are on Instagram that aren't on Facebook and vice versa. Obviously, you know, Raf's got that info from somewhere, but it's just so interesting.
And I was just going to say, to second that at that event, and more so in America and starting to trend into Australia, is that what I couldn't believe is it wasn't just about, you know, young girls with ponytails doing dance routines. It's like lawyers of TikTok, you know, accountants of TikTok. And not only that, the demographic or the age demographic bands that were emerging towards TikTok blew my mind. Like, I was like, this is not just for kids anymore. It's becoming a mature platform.
Yeah.
So it's something to have in the arsenal, is where I was going with that as well. Not to be just kicked to the side for another year or two.
No, this is what I say. The dichotomy is you want to be everywhere where your customers are, right? And so they're on TikTok, they're on Instagram, they're on Facebook, they're on YouTube, they're on Google. With unlimited resources, you are everywhere, right? The dichotomy of that is you can't, when you're starting out or even at our size, like we can't do everything all the time without, so there's the resources limited. So you do the best you can, right? And go as deep as you can into a handful of those, right? I don't think you should though do poorly at all. Right, yeah. Be great at a handful.
I totally agree, and that resonates with me so much, because we just had someone else on the pod earlier today that we recorded, and they went heavy down one channel, right? And that was that distribution model, right? Not online, not TikTok shops, not Instagram and ads, and the rest of it was, he went really, really hard and did really, really well in that one channel. And I'm so with you, because it's overwhelming. Right. Even with us and the size that we are, I sit down and we bring in Raf, you know, for the meeting, and okay, let's bring in Nick and let's have a chat with this. But it's all time. It's all resource on top of what you already have to do. Right. And then it's like, okay, well, what consultant do I need to hire? And then it goes into another whole space. And this is the issue, right? In this space is, and I'm, I raise my hand to this, right? And it's probably because I've been, I haven't had to, because I've had someone like you in my corner that I can go to at any point in time. And, you know, I'm blessed and grateful to have you as a business partner, because you're all around this topic. But for the people that aren't around this topic, and this is what one of the conversations we had with Mark is, stop looking for someone else, right? Try and learn some of it yourself.
Well, it's not even try, you have to.
Right. There you go. You didn't hear it from me. You heard it from the expert. You have to learn it yourself. And there's other people that are very successful business entrepreneurs on Instagram and Facebook saying the same thing, right? Like the wheelhouse of a business, I shouldn't say all businesses, of a lot of businesses, online anyways, our whole business is online, is ads, right? Like you can have the distribution, you can have a good product, you can have the rest of it, but if your competitor has the same thing and they're schooling you on ads, you've got no chance. Why? Because they're getting the attention and you're not. Mm. Now, it's easy for me to say, and I honestly feel like a hypocrite because I still don't, I haven't dived deep into this, again, because I'm grateful for having you, right? Knock on wood, nothing happened, right? But someone like Mark, right, when we were sitting down in that meeting going, yeah, but I got to find a CRO person, you know, conversion rate optimization, which is optimizing, obviously, your website for better conversion. And but what about this ads person? And check this out. I had this, you know, what about the, right? And basically, the conversation over that hour or so was, no, bring it back. Are you going to do this or not? Right? Like, and that's the hardest decision, right? We have someone here live in studio now writing down, right? Okay, pen and paper, boom, let me write this down. The reality is he's either going to take that and put it in his, you know, business folder and not look at it ever again, or he's going to take that information and he's going to deep dive. Mm. And he's going to do deep diving into ChatGPT, and he's going to ask people questions, and he's going to watch YouTube videos. The reality is all the information is out there already. The experience isn't, right? And the beauty with you, and this is the way I look at, right, digital marketing, is you've got these experts that run ads, that have digital marketing companies, okay, that are charging people $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, $10,000 a month, whatever it is, that have never owned an e-com business.
It's that time of year again at Unemployable, where we're opening up our Unemployable business coaching program. It's over a 12-month period, and with that, you get private one-on-one coaching, group coaching, as well as private and live events throughout the year. You could get private coaching with me, and not only me, but our panel of experts that we have put together. These panel of experts have been in our network and are the exact people that we use in our business successes. People from branding, sales, marketing, our lawyers, our accountants, everyone that has helped build our businesses, you have access to. If this sounds of interest, go to www.unemployable.com.au/coaching and register your interest to see if it's a fit for you and us. Hope to see you there.
If they were so good at ads, you would think I can make a shit ton more money, right, with another business, an online business. But instead, they're sitting behind this veil, right, of ambiguity that is such an unregulated market.
That's because they don't do any fucking work and they're charging $300
for it. There's a lot of those, right? And this is the thing. I'm sure there's some amazing ones out there, but the issue is you got to go through a lot of shit to find those ones or get lucky. Someone like you, right? Not that, you know, you promote this at all, but you've got a very, very select few, right? But the beauty with you is you're in the trenches every day in your own businesses spending your own money. When you got $15 million of spend, a big chunk of that money is your money, right? Is our money. Mm. And that is the difference. So when you learn it, right, and you go there and you're putting your balls on the line, right, whether it's in business or it's in real estate and property development, whether it's in trades, right, you wouldn't be trading. Like you're talking yesterday, I'm putting 150 grand into this one. I might lose it all, but I might make a million. You're not doing that without doing a shit ton of deep work over a long period of time to create the confidence in yourself to go out there. Yet we're confident in spending 100 grand on stock, 20 grand on branding, right? Getting a warehouse, doing all these things. Yet the most important part, people don't want to know. And yes, I'm a hypocrite because I haven't done it, but I've got that.
On that, right? There's having skin in the game. So the differentiation between our businesses, what business I'm involved in versus the business I work with, which is a handful. I think the difference for me has always been because I do the same things I do with the business I work with, their accounts, as I do for ours. And the moment it stops working or I need to change it in ours is the moment I do it in theirs.
And so I do things very contrarian to, you know, best practices or whatever else, but I do it because it's my dollars on the line. It's our dollars on the line. And it works because it's the best in class and it works. I won't change it until it doesn't for us. As a business owner, and to your point around, I wouldn't call yourself a hypocrite. And the reason why is because as a business owner, there's three ways, right? Either you learn it, you have someone that's in the business, right? And that could be a business partner or it could be someone you're hiring.
In the business.
Yeah,
when you said that, in the business.
Or it's an agency, right? Now, if you don't know it, it's trust and luck, right? On whether someone in the business or an agency is going to make it work for you. Because if you don't know it, you can't hold the person or the people to account and know what they're talking about. And so you need to know something well enough or have the trust, which we have, right? So you don't need to learn it because you have me and we work together. But for the business person, they need to know it well enough to be able to hold to account before they hire someone or before they bring on an agency to know whether they're doing a good job or not. That's the difference. So learn it first. This is why I say you have to know. You have to know it well enough. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be an expert in it. You don't have to be a master at it, but know it well enough, have done it enough, have enough experience. So when you bring someone on board, you can ensure they're doing the right thing.
Like the saying goes, you can't bullshit a bullshitter, right?
Yeah.
And you want to make sure that you know.
One of the really key moments of the sit down that we had is when I was saying to you, what about CRO optimization? Yep. What about a content manager? I'm thinking about hiring a content manager. What about an ads person? And you're like, you started digging into my numbers and you're like, okay, let's go back a step. Let's make sure that you have the numbers that supports being able to run ads because some businesses...
Support a business.
Yeah, right. Support a business, right? Let's see if you even have the numbers. You're like, okay, you've got numbers. They seem pretty good. Check. You're like, okay, what's competition doing? Yes, there's other competitions that have proof of concept that they've been able to achieve what you're trying to do. So you're not trying to break new ground. Check. Then the last thing that you did was, dude, stop overthinking about this. Stop trying to hire all these people to do the work that you don't want to do. And just give yourself 1 month. Go out there and give yourself 1 month and prove the concept. Just try and get one ad ticking over.
Mm.
You kind of brought it back from me having to create this whole flywheel of content creation and CRO and team and all this to just like, how about you just go prove the concept, give yourself some confidence that it can work and then build upon that.
Yep.
And that was a real pivotal moment because I'm like, well, I'm not going to be wasting 2 years. I'm going to be hitting it hard for the next 3 months. You're like, just give it a month. But I'm going to be like, I do things a little bit, I went extra. I'm doing a UGC shoot and I'm doing all these things. But just prove the concept. And that was a real pivotal
moment. The proof of concept, I think, is knowing that you have a business that you can scale. So the first point you said, like the total addressable market or the TAM, what is the size of the market you're trying to go into? And there'll be stats, there'll be numbers, there'll be market based stuff you can look at, or you can have a look at competitors and have a rough idea of their size. There's one for you, and you're like, oh, this is them. I think they're doing this. And if you already have a business, you already have relationships with factories, you already have relationships with suppliers, you can find out rough numbers just by having conversations or just meeting people and knowing people in your industry. So knowing that you have something that you're able to scale and grow, then going back into the business, going, okay, well, does my business fundamentals actually work? Do I have enough GP in this thing to actually have a play? Right, because when you're starting out, like yes, you have an Amazon business. Now you're transitioning into e-com and Shopify. You have a brand on Amazon, which means you have a bit of a brand. Mm-hmm. Transitioning to Shopify, like you're having to build your brand not from scratch, right? But it's like shifting to a state. You're in Queensland. We're in Queensland, mm-hmm. right? It's like opening the same business in Melbourne. There'll be a few people that know about it, but not as many. Mm-hmm. So you now have to start from scratch and build that brand, right? And so, do you have enough percentage, right, margin, and then percentage to spend? Because you're going to be spending more in the early days. Right. And as you scale, your ad spend percentage will go down. As your revenue increases, your ad spend percentage will go down because you'll reach a critical mass where your business is, I guess, humming or there's an inflection point where you cross. But your sales reach a point where it will be perpetually growing and your ad spend gets to a point where it's profitable to do so.
Hmm. But you mentioned a couple of things just about, UGC and all that. And we'll touch on the AI piece there as well. I mean, I'll layer this a bit earlier. Like you got $100,000 SKUs. Firstly, how many of those would you be running ads on at any one time? Like you're running 100,000 ads.
Right. Sorry. Clarify. It depends on the platform. So you can have, like we've got a large inventory.
Yeah.
Google supports, like Google Search or Google Shopping supports having a large inventory, right? So it's a little bit different in that sense. So, or if you're doing marketplaces, you want to make sure that all your products listed in the marketplaces, if that's your path. So you want to have every product promoted. Some will always perform better than others, and it ends up being like a 5-95, 90-10 rule where a small percentage of products will bring in the majority of the traffic. Then when you're coming back to, you know, say your Metas and whatever else, you have a limitation on the number of ads that you can run, which means you have a limitation on the number of brands, products, categories.
What's the limitation?
Limitation meaning, so if you're spending under 100 grand, then you've got 250 ads you can run. Right. If it's over 100,000, that's X and so on and so on, right? So there's a forced limit on the number of ads you can run on the platform. So which means you can't have a ad for every single product.
Got it.
But you are pushing on the hero products, the hero brands, the hero categories, the things that are eye-grabbing and capture. And if it's, whether it's a product or whether it's a service, you know, if you're a, I don't know why I keep coming back to plumbers, but if you're a plumber, right, the thing that people most need is probably a blocked toilet or, you know, a leaky faucet or whatever it is, a leaky sink. So that's the, hey, we will fix this in 15 minutes. We'll be there in 15 minutes. Got a blocked toilet? Yep, we'll unstick you within a day. Like that's your hero ad. Yeah, and the other services.
Sorry, with Meta, for example, have you found that there's a certain, like you guys are a $100 million business and a lot of people who are doing ads like $2-3 million business, but have you found that regardless of the size of the business, there's a certain daily budget per ad that works, or can you just continue to scale it up?
Good. One of the things, and I guess this is a principle that you want to take away, is you have to have a always on mentality. Right. And what that means is that you have a dollar amount that you're committing to regardless. Right. And so it comes back to the business size. But you want to go, I'm committing to $100 a day, $1,000 a day, $10,000 a day, whatever it is. But you're committing to that and you're feeding the volume of ads, because if you commit to the spend, it forces the action to then go away and get the ads created. Because you don't want to be spending 10 grand a day in Meta on one ad. Particularly in Australia anyway, like it's unlikely that that's going to scale for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And so the rule of thumb that I have for our business, right, is about $200. So if you spend $200 on an ad, and if it hasn't performed, right, now this is where ad metrics matter, right? So I'm looking at things like the click-through rates, right? I'm looking at things like the ad to cart rates. I'm not necessarily looking at return on ad spend. I'm not necessarily looking at my customer acquisitions or the sales. I'm looking at the sub metrics of the ads that lead to the sales, right? And so, because if I can get a ad, and we have some of these, but like if you can have an ad on Meta that's getting a 5% click through rate, right? Your cost per click is going to be so low, right? That it almost makes the ad, obviously being targeted audience, you know, you're not just targeting people in Indonesia or something that's completely outside of it. Your ability to get those sales or scale is there.
Mm. Yeah. Is that the first 200 or 200 a day? So you want to know, do you want to know if an ad works within the first $200?
Correct. Yeah. So it's you commit to an amount per day for your business.
Yep.
Right. And then you're feeding ads in. Now, if you go, I spent $200 on this ad, it's not performing, I got to turn it off, but you don't have another ad to replace it, guess what? You got to keep the ad on. Right, because you committed to it's the amount that you're spending per day. So force the action that's going to get you to get new ads, right? And that's, you don't want to be lazy. Oh, I'm changing a headline. Oh, I've just rewrote some text. You know, go out, take some photos, take some videos, right? Actually get some new content to throw up as an ad.
That's true. The second half of my sort of question previously was about how many ads in your inventory are you running on, and more so for UGC, which would be your Metas and your Insta and your bit more visual platforms.
Yeah.
Have you started using AI to generate images at all? You're still all going organic content, go out, take a selfie stick, take a photo. Yeah. That's the only way to generate at the moment.
But so I say yes, right? And again, it's dependent. Like we have resource to be able to go and do that.
Yeah.
If you can create an on par So image and video, I think, is a little bit different. But if you can create an on-par image or video that you can test and run, try it. At the end of the day, if I don't care if someone went and created an AI ad for me and they said, oh, it's AI generated and it runs for 30 seconds, right? Test it. And if it beat my 30-second ad that, you know, was professionally shot or shot on an iPhone, I don't care. Like, if it works, do it.
My question is, have you started using and testing it? Okay, no. Cool.
And I don't think it's
there yet.
I don't think it's there yet.
Yeah.
Like, if when you think about, like, we think about the pace of growth or the improvement of, you know, image generation, and video generation with AI in this last 2 years, it's gone leaps and bounds. Mm. Right, the next 2 years might be different, but I don't think it's at a point now. For us or for me, it's not there yet.
Yeah. But don't always over determine it as well. Like, if you've got some good stills and some good video content, and you just don't have the right voice, then put a little bit of voice over.
Yeah,
use it sparingly as well if you're just starting out.
And I think this is like where you can go into, you know, Facebook ads library and see what others are doing, you know, if see what the competition is doing, right? And you can actually go and see the successes that they're having on these ads, right? Rather than you thinking you have to go do this just because it's the in thing right now and everyone's, you know, AI is going to replace all humans and the rest of it. I'm all for AI and the different things that it can provide. But I'm still at a point too where that if you can get some good organic content, right, keep running with it, but always keep an eye out, right? Because what you don't want to do either is sit back because of your biases, right? And then all of a sudden a year or a year and a half or 2 years later, your main competitors are steamrolling you because you thought this wasn't going to happen either. So that's very, very important. And I'm not saying this for us, because I know that we're on the forefront of technology as a business.
Yeah.
But that's us as a business, right? That's some of our values in the business.
Three things. Whether you're starting out or whether you've been doing this for a while, if in the three platforms, in Meta, Google, and YouTube, for example, if you're a business and you're going, okay, what can I do better? Or why are these guys beating me? Or I need to come up with new ads in Meta. Have a look at all your competitors, right? And this is what I do. I go, whatever competitor's name and Facebook, go to their Facebook page, go to their ad library, have a look through their ads, watch them, have a look at their creative, what landing pages they go through, right? You can reverse engineer every competitor in your space and go, what are they doing? And the question you ask is, how can I do it better? What I know my customer, I know my market, how can I do this better? Right, because at the end of the day, you're both vying for the same audience's attention. Mm. It's the same customer you're pushing for. So, what is the point of difference for my product, or what can I do better on Google? Just spend an hour typing in whatever thing you're selling, the widget, right? The widget location, or just the widget. Enter. Have a look through shopping. Have a look through the shopping feeds. Have a look through the ads. Have a look through the Google My Business. Have a look through the organic. What are they doing differently, or what are they doing that I'm not doing, right? So that, and then on YouTube, a simple way to see what ads have worked or run that people have run, go to their YouTube channel, filter by highest views, because you have to have a YouTube video to run a YouTube video in ads. It needs to be in your account. And so you can just filter by highest views and it'll pull up. Usually it's the highest views videos that are ones that they run ads for. I did this recently with not a competitor, but just someone I was interested in. Appliances Online, I think they do a really cracking job in Australia. And they've got this really good YouTube series or ad videos that they're doing, which is like No More Bleep Appliances. And so you can have a look at all the ones that they've run, right, that are in the same vein for their YouTube video ads.
Just on that, because I think I use AddySpy or Facebook Ads Manager or whatever. When you're looking at your competitors' ads, because we don't know their conversion data, do you have like a ranking of what you think the most important metrics are? Is it likes? Is it shares? Is it comments? Is it longest run?
So I guess it depends, right? So engagement is a big thing. Longest run, but usually it'll be longest run and engagement will pair, because if something's been running for 2 years, there'll usually be more comments and engagement. You'll never know what the conversion metrics are unless you actually see the business data, but you can infer, you can make a rough guess, right? You can infer some information. And so you can go, well, okay, well, if my business is converting at this, they're the bigger player. They're probably converting higher, right? And my AOV is X. They're probably about the same, or maybe they buy 1.2 times more, right? So you can get some rough numbers and you go, okay, well, if it's had, use your numbers, right? If you have a 1% engagement rate or 1% comment rate on your ads, you can math that back to go, okay, well, it's this many views. If you have a look at your CPMs, right, your cost per thousand impressions, math that back and go, okay, well, they probably spent this much on the ad to get that many views, to get that many likes, to get that many comments. You can...
Well, what about like, so like I said earlier, I put six of the best direct response meta ads type businesses in and I was checking out all their ads. And the one thing that I noticed is that not a lot of them have, and I was just looking at video ads for this, but not a lot of them have video ads running now.
Yep.
Is that a problem with the software or is like, usually you would think that there's current live ads,
yep,
but none of them seem to have current live ads.
So this is, so don't, the thing I would say around the competitor, I actually don't really look at our competitors, but for us, I don't really look at our competitors that much. I look at the best. If I see a really good YouTube,
these weren't competitors. They were just similar brands, industry, different products, but yep, really good.
That it would be unlikely that it is that the video ads are not performing, that they're not running and they're just running stills or static carousels or whatever. It might just be a timing thing.
Right.
Maybe their ads got banned, right, or got pulled down.
It's unusual.
Yeah, it's unusual.
I think another thing when you're like, you have to be all on it, you know, not like all in, is I look at Dan and we go out for dinner and Dan has his laptop. We go to the fight show and Dan has his backpack and he's got his laptop. Like wherever Dan goes, his laptop is with him at all times, ads library open, double, triple checking, finger on the pulse.
When you're spending 50, 60 grand a day, you probably want to have your finger pretty close to it.
Yeah, well, the way I look at it is whether you're spending 500 bucks, 1,000, 50,000, 60,000, 100,000, a million, it shouldn't change, right? Because what you're trying to do is be efficient as possible. The reason why I'm saying that is not to, you know, piss in Dan's pocket. It's, that's what it takes, right?
It's the finger
to go from good,
it's the finger
to great, to go from $1 million business to a $10 million business, from a $10 million business to a 50, you know, these are the types of things that people don't see that are actually happening in real time, you know? And I doubt the digital marketing company that you're paying, and I'm not trying to beg on digital marketing companies, to be honest with you, because I know that there's some amazing ones out there, but everyone on this panel has been screwed by a digital marketing company in the past.
Like I went to the Grand Prix and the guy that I met at the Grand Prix that
yeah,
presented me an offer for equity yeah, and this and that had his laptop at the Grand Prix with
yeah,
him, right? But he's one of the good ones, I
yeah,
assume.
Yeah.
But he's got 6, 7, 8, 12 other clients that are vying for his attention. So it's like,
and that is the issue. I mean? Like with
it's
Dan,
different,
right? Dan, I've had a discussion multiple times. We can blow up Dan. I say, Dan, let's just start an ads business.
Right?
Agency. He's had one before. He's had a massive one before. Now he's got a handful, just a handful, right? Yeah, man. Yeah. You know, because we can get plenty of people to you. But the reality is, I know deep down inside, he's thinking, focus is going to go from here, right? To then focus is going to go to 50 clients.
It's not as scalable as people make you think.
Not five, right? Because you can't sit there on an ads library and look at 50 and be the finger on the pulse without one of them not performing. Whereas if you're the person that's out there going, I'm going to run this. Like, I'll give you an example. YouTube Studio, right? YouTube Studio is our analytics, basically, software that YouTube gives you to analyze all the data on your YouTube channel. Since I've had that, I'm on that thing, man, I don't know how many times a day, updating, checking. It's like an addiction now. Analytics, who's watching, average age group, males, female. Oh, we just increased by 2% more females.
Never
yes,
why I trade.
Right? Yeah, right. It's but the finger is on the pulse. And when I see things, right, you're on it. Like yesterday, I listened to the podcast, and I'm like, at the beginning of the pod that launched yesterday, it just goes from the trailer straight into our conversation, but I'm already like halfway through a conversation at the beginning. And I'm like, How didn't this get picked up? Why? Because I'm on it. But there's been three or four other people before me that have seen it and that didn't get picked up. It's the first minute and a half. Straight away, I'm on the phone. What's go? Finger on the pulse, right? And looking at these trends and different actions and what needs to be done, right? So it doesn't go without the work. So when you say, do it yourself, learn it yourself, knowing what you know today, where would you go to learn? What would you do? What are some top places? What are some top? And don't just tell me YouTube.
Well, I asked this question last time. And we all agree that agencies were shit.
Right? Like YouTube. Yeah, that's obvious. ChatGPT. Like if you're saying go to YouTube or ChatGPT, what are you typing in? Like I want to go granular because again, someone like the person that's here, right, is going to be doing this.
Yep.
So what would you tell him to do? Because he'll be in the exact same situation right now that thousands of other people, the thousands of other people that watch this.
So I'm going to, when the three of us sat down, yeah, one of Mark's things he was saying was, what about getting a CRO agency, which is conversion rate optimization agency? What about CRO in general? And I'm like, why? Like, forget about it. Don't think about it. One of the challenges that you have is things are quite simple when you break it down with ads, right? It's the differentiation between simple and complex and easy and hard, right? It is a simple thing, right? So there's not a lot of steps, but it's hard to do. So when I say always on, the best thing someone can do is commit to an amount of money that they're going to spend every month in their business. Why? Because it forces the action. Now, if you commit to that, you're forced to then run ads in some capacity. You're forced to look at the numbers, right? And you may not understand them, but just by looking at them every day, you'll start to get a sense of, is it working? Is it not? Did this number go up or did it go down? What does that number mean? Right? It forces the activity of understanding. Like we've spoken about, the teaching and whatever, like I'm not, yes, there's a handful of clients I look after, but the question in my mind is always, how much time will it take away from our businesses? Mm-hmm. How much time will it take away from our family? And what is the highest leverage activity I can do? But I don't have a lot of places that I can recommend, unfortunately, where it's like, go to this person and learn. Because I recently went through, over the Christmas break, I'm like, I'm gonna buy the best, supposed best ads course in the world, right? Well, ranked number one's ad course. And I went through and I'm like, this is not good. Like this is not to a standard that I would be happy to recommend someone, and yet this is the highest rated ads course supposedly around.
Sorry, everyone else out there, you're fucked.
No,
I'm not so jovial.
The reason why I'm saying that is nothing beats experience. Nothing beats doing. Because if you go and learn from someone that's teaching you the wrong thing in the wrong way, you think it's the right thing in the right way, and you do it, and you're like, well, why isn't this working? Right? It's because you have a poor understanding of fundamentals. Doing the activity is the best way to build the fundamentals.
So for instance, people that never have done it before open up.
Can I offer some context as someone who's never done it before and is going through this exact
amazing, because I want the listeners here, because it's all good talking about I want to get in the weeds. Yeah. I don't want to sit up here. Like, what are you actually doing? Go ahead.
Sorry, before you go into that, I want to give an actual tangible example for Meta as an example, right? You got a business and I'm saying to you, I'm sitting here going, hey, you need to spend this amount. You're committing this amount. Well, I don't know what to do. Great. Here is the simplicity component of it, right? In Meta, you have a campaign. You go to Ads Manager.
Meta is Facebook and Instagram.
Yep. You have a campaign that you create. You have an audience you set and you have an ad that you run. That's it.
And you put a dollar amount.
And you put a dollar amount.
Yeah.
Right? Now this is the simplicity component. What do each of those things mean? Right? If you've never done it before, let's go end result back. Yeah? For the ad, there's some creative. It's an image. There's a headline. There's a description. And there's a place you're sending the people to. Four things. That's it. So is it impossible?
Can you repeat those things one more time?
You have the creative.
Yep.
You have the headline. You have the description. You have the place you're sending them to, right? So a call to action in the landing page. It's four things. You can sit down and think, okay, well, my product or my business and my customer, what are they going to be interested by? here's my headline. Go to ChatGPT, give me some headlines, right? If you want to do it that way. But here's it. There's your headline. Description. What is a customer or potential customer of mine most interested in? Handful of points, five lines, bullet points. Done. Imagery. What are they going to connect with? If it's a service, people buy from people. Maybe take a photo, a video of yourself, right? Because people, if you're a hairdresser, if you're a plumber, they're going to buy from you, the person, not you, the business. If it's a product, hey, I might showcase what this hat actually does. Where can I wear this hat, right? I can be outside. I can be at the beach. I can be whatever it is. They're your four things. There's your ad.
Right? How much would you put on it? Is it $20, $50, $100, $200?
This is what I'm saying. It's you're committing to a base amount to spend.
The goal is to continue to play around with those four elements until it starts to work.
I'm trying to say there's only four things to get an ad live. It's not that complex. It's actually simple. It's hard to do and to get right, but to get started, it's simple. Then next step up, the ad set, the audience. Well, if I'm selling, I don't like keeping up plumbing, right?
Stick to plumbing. It's good.
What are you might be interested in DIY, right? Or the people that I'm going to be selling to might be interested in DIY, right? They might be homeowners, right? They might be, you know, between the ages of X and Y, but they might have a family, right? So who are the people, the audience that I'm picking, who are the people that are in my space? What geographic location am I doing? It's just an audience, right? So you have the ad, you've picked your audience, and then you have your campaign, you set your budget, and away you go. Now, yes, there's awareness and traffic and sales and all that sort of stuff, types of campaigns. But my point is that it's four things for an ad, a very minor handful of things for an audience, and then one thing for a campaign. And there's your first thing launched for your business.
Have you noticed, again, I keep sort of hitting on it, not that you probably do use it, that AI has empowered these platforms to make them a hell of a lot easier to run?
They're using AI completely.
Yeah.
The algorithm and...
And so this is the thing. When you're at scale, you can lean on large data sets to be able to get the best outcomes. Unfortunately, the more refined the audience that you have or the more targeted you have, the higher the cost and the less likely the algorithm will work. Because you got to understand, particularly in Australia too, you got to understand that the AI stuff in, let's say, Google and Meta, it's based on 300 million people in US. Mm. We've got 30 million in Australia.
Right.
Right. And when you think about the audience sizes, when you get down to industries, it's a lot less. Like when you're dealing with data that's built off 10x size, trying to then go, okay, apply that model down to a tenth of the size in Australia, the model isn't as good.
So the point there is that there's some industries where the inbuilt Meta AI will work really, really well.
Yeah.
And there's some where it won't, and you'll have to feed or build lookalike audiences, etc., to make sure it works. Because everyone always has that question, should I be using Facebook's AI or should I be using lookalike? Can I just touch on one thing before we get off this topic, sure. If we move? The psychology to all this is so important. With relation to courses, the best course in the world, the second best course, a lot of the times the person who... It's like having a kid. If you've had one kid, you're not an expert on having kids. You've only had one kid. Mm. A lot of the times the people who are selling these courses maybe have done it with one business and then they're trying to sell a course.
10 years ago. Yep.
The nuances from these courses, they don't transfer to other businesses. So that's step number one. Step number two, with relation to the skin in the game, I can attest that completely. I've had someone in my business spending $200 a day for the last 3 months and I haven't checked a single metric on how they're doing. Because I'm not the one doing it. I'm not the one putting that cash. I'm spending $200 of my money that's being spent, but he hasn't shown me anything amazing, so I'm not looking into seeing what's working. I'm just letting it go. The minute that I start spending my money and I put my ego and my ads and my effort into it, I'm going to want a return on that effort, right? So as someone who had someone doing it, someone that I trust, I still wasn't looking and seeing what he was doing. You've got to do it.
So then to your point, like if you're... Forget $200 a day. If you're going to make a $6,000 trade every month, that's what $200 a day is, how much would you at least look at the numbers of that trade?
100%. Or look at the chart.
Yeah. Like, and this is the thing. You got to understand $10 a day is $3,650 a year. Yeah. That's not a small amount of money for a lot of businesses. So when you go to $1,000 a day, right, it just keeps on adding up. So think of it I always bring it back to, what is it spending in a year not what is it day. Because day, you can just go, oh, it's just a coffee a day.
But that's what everyone does. Like if you're not dialed into your business, yep, that's what we do.
Yep. You got to look at this as an investment, right? Mm. Like every dollar that you're putting into that ads, that Facebook ads library.
That was when I turned around.
That was your aha moment?
When he started pitching this to me as a trade. Yep. This is a trade.
Yeah. Right. You look every dollar that you put into that Facebook library, every piece of content that you put in there. Don't think of it as dollar revenue coming back. Think about it as data. That is the market telling you what you're doing very good,
right, or
what you're doing very bad.
Right.
And that's where you test and you measure. And this is what Dan has said in the past, right? Test and measure. Get 50 pieces of content, throw it at the wall. Get 50, again, not saying that you have to go get 50 pieces, but he uses this analogy a lot. See what sticks. Two stick, back those two. Drop the other 48, go get another 50 pieces of content, throw them at the wall. Two or three of those stick, next thing you know, you have five good pieces of content. And this is where I now want to get into is the content piece, because I've been talking a lot about, you know, with clients and friends and acquaintances and business, and ads are one thing, right? But the content is, to me, almost more important than the actual ads. Ads is content, right?
Yeah, the synergistic relationship. And I mean, we struggle with this internally a little bit, but there is a synergistic or symbiotic relationship between what you post organically and what you run as ads.
Yeah.
Right. They should inform and support and help each other. The content you are running, right, that you're posting on Instagram yourself, look at the engagement. If it pops, probably going to pop well as an ad as well.
Yeah. Like you look at, you know, UGC content and all these different types of ads. Like I'll give Unemployable as an example. We've been doing everything organically, right? Other than right at the beginning, we wanted some vanity metrics and ran some YouTube ads, right? Because we wanted to get those 3-second views to make us feel good. And we stopped that very quickly. And since then, we've just been literally chipping away day by day, one piece of content, two pieces of content every day on multiple platforms. And we're growing. The pod is growing. Subscribers are growing. Views are growing. Followers are growing on the different platforms. And we're just, every week, we're just hitting a new level. We are going to be running ads, but now that we will be running ads, and when we do run ads and we're bringing it back to, you know, the Unemployable pages, what are people going to do? They're going to look at, oh, who are these guys? They're going to go on Instagram. They're not going to see 3 followers, right? They're going to see 14,000 followers. Oh, these guys see. They're going to go on YouTube. They're going to say, oh, they don't have 4 subscribers. They got X amount of subscribers. So it builds that credibility out. So what we're doing, right, is UGC content. And don't get more UGC than us, right, spitting information here about what we know and what we don't know and what we need to learn and helping others. On the Friday pod, the same thing, right? And this is, now we have thousands of videos that we can use. We've got coaching calls, we've got events, we've got pods on pods on pods that we can then use and go and run ads to. What would you recommend people to do? And also from a lead magnet perspective, right?
Yep.
Rather than a cheap $1 fucking ebook that has been done over and over and over again that no one actually wants.
So at the end of the day, communication is about value, right? So what value is your customer deriving from the interaction they're having with you? And if it's email, I know for myself, right, and I'm sure you guys do, and everybody listening to this, the volume of emails that you get, because when you buy a product, you're kind of automatically subscribed, and all of a sudden your inbox is flooded with just
shit.
Yeah, right. And so, what differentiates for yourself, you whether you click on something or not, right? Chances are, it's actually not necessarily the subject line or the thing. It's, hey, I'm looking forward to this email, right? So I know I'm going to open this email regardless, because I get so much value from this person, this business, this whatever. So the value component is the thing that I would lean on first. It's be so valuable in your communication that people want to, valuable or relevant. So an example would be the perfect situation for us would be if we knew the exact moment that someone needed to change their air filter, right? We just knew, right? And they get home from that day, their bike cogs out because their air filter's just so cluttered with stuff, right? They go put on their trailer, ride it back home. They get home, they open up. The first thing they see is an email from us that says, hey, you know, you need a new air filter? That's creepy, but it's the most relevant, perfect thing because for them to go ride their bike again, they need that air filter. Right? We're there first. They're going to open that email because it's highly relevant. So the relevancy piece and the value piece. And then on the lead magnet side, if you don't have value to add, don't do a lead magnet, right? You actually do more damage, right? Because if someone opens that lead magnet, it reads that thing, reads that ebook, reads that piece of content, reads that whatever, watches that video, and they go, I got nothing from this. I actually just wasted my time. I wasted 10 minutes of my time reading this thing, watching this thing. Don't do it, right? Ask for a name and email and just follow up later. So for anything that anyone that's giving something away, you want to make the thing that you're giving away as valuable as a paid service or the thing that you're offering is paid value.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on value in regards to not selling through email?
So every business is different. And this is where we have supplier relationships we need to manage as well. We have products we need to have visibility for. So every business is different. What I will say there is that where you can deliver value, you should. And so what I mean by that is if I'm having a conversation with Mark and I'm saying to him, hey, there's this really great product, right? That's going to help your business. Here's my affiliate link. I'm just in his mind, he might still like me. He's still, yeah, he trusts me, whatever. But I've just devalued that trust by saying, I'm going to take something away from this interaction with him by him buying that thing that I'm recommending. He now devalues that thing I'm recommending. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I say, hey, here's this really good thing. And he then goes, oh, have you got an affiliate link? I'll buy through your link. I'll be like, sure, that's fine. My point is this. If you can deliver so much value through email because your business supports that or adds value to that, all you're doing is when someone goes to Google and searches for your business, the propensity or the likelihood that they're going to buy goes up. The click-through rate of your ads goes up. They go through Facebook. They see your ad. Your click-through rate goes up. Why? Because you just delivered so much value through the communication medium, right?
Every time this guy comes on, I just like...
You make sure you call him first.
Like notes and notes and, you know, and I think every Australian needs to understand this space and listen to these pods and listen to them. This isn't just a fun pod to listen on your way home from Brisbane, right? That's just like the starter. And I just want to say again, Dan, thank you so much for being here and giving your time. I know you're very passionate in this space, and I'm glad that you've kind of embraced it and seen what we're doing. And you've added so much value to the community, to our business community, and everyone that is watching at the same time. James, Mark, thank you very much. If you want to see Dan's amazing work, just go onto MX Store. Google MX Store, Google Fight HQ, Google these businesses, targeted down, chased down for the rest of your life, whether you like boxing or not, whether you ride motocross or not, eventually you'll just buy a bike. I just want to say thank you again for watching. Thank you for your attention. Please comment, put in the comments some questions that you have. So when we get Dan on next time, we can answer those questions because we're assuming what people want to know. But give us the data. This is us investing, just like a Facebook ad investing, right? Give us the data back so that way we can test and measure and bring on different people and talk about different topics. Thank you very much.
Hey there, I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.